Okay, y'all, I think we're actually ready. I'm going to turn it over to, oh, actually, yeah, you want to say hi and then I can do announcements, Robbie? Okay, so there's Robbie. And we are starting, what are we starting? Transforming Problems, which is, yeah. How appropriate. So this is a six, yeah. If you don't have any problems, you can leave now. Obviously I need to be here. And so this is a 6-session module. We will be going for 7 weeks because July 4th falls on a Monday and we won't have class on that Monday. So 6 sessions of actual class. And if you would like to, if you would like for me to explain how to find our course materials, because this question typically does come up. So I am going to share my screen, and basically you would sign into kadampa-center.org, and then you would put a slash and then user. Let me see where it is. Let's try it here. Okay, so here I would go to Kadampa. Usually it comes up, sorry. And then you would do your slash after it and put user. And this is where you would enter your information that you should have received once you registered for class. And Aaron, I'll show you how to do that later since I don't think you've registered yet. And so once you're here, then you would, let me get rid of that. Okay, you would scroll down. So that's very important because you don't see it yet. So scroll down, and then you're going to type in your username. And for Discovering Buddhism, it is db-participant. And then you're going to enter the password that you will have received in your email. And, okay. I'm sorry to take up time doing this, but it does help as far as being able to access the course materials. So you would enter that password, and then that brings you to this screen here, Discovering Buddhism Material, which is really meant for Discovering Buddhism students who have enrolled in the Kadampa Center's course. And so all the information you need for Discovering Buddhism course is here, and it is added by module. So here's Discovering Buddhism Module 11, Transforming Problems. There's no homework listed yet, but probably will be later on this evening. And then our information sheet is here. And this information sheet has everything you need to know. So our instructor is Robbie Watkins. I'm the program manager. To participate online or on site or to view live stream on YouTube. And then here is where you can, this one's really important, this 4th bullet point here, YouTube recordings of missed classes. And so you would just click on that, and that's going to take you to the Kadampa Center's YouTube media site. And there you can access class recordings if you've missed any or if you want to go back and review those. Here's our course dates and then all of the reading materials that are suggested and required if you are going for a Discovering Buddhism certificate. If you are interested in going for a Discovering Buddhism certificate, that is issued by the FPMT, which is the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition. So if you scroll all the way down, all that information on how to obtain that certificate is here. So we don't issue those certificates through the Kadampa Center, but that would be done through the FPMT. All right. All of our programs here at the Kadampa Center are done free of charge. We would like the Dharma to continue to be free and available to anyone and everyone. But if you are moved to help support our programs and keep our building open and running, you can always donate in any number of ways, online, by texting, dropping cash or checks either in our donation boxes here on site or by check to the Kadampa Center. So lots of different ways to give. And as always, that generosity would be greatly and very much appreciated. And any amount is fine. And don't feel like you have to give. Okay, so I know that was a quick overview, but I'm going to go ahead and close that out and go ahead and turn it over to Robbie now, if you're ready, Robbie.
Okay, I'm on. Okay, welcome everyone. Good evening. Am I going to get Zoom people here on the screen in front of me, Chris? Thank you. Just a moment.
Thank you for your patience, everyone. Technology can be amazing in so many ways. We are bringing this to you from the comfort of your home and probably some folks that don't even live locally.
Okay, got them. Hello, Zoom people. Okay. Thank you, Chris. Okay.
And thank you for your patience, folks.
Yeah, it's good to see everyone. I like to start off by getting a feeling for who's here. So if you're either in the room or if you're at home on Zoom, and this is your very first time at Kadampa Center, if you could raise your hand. Okay, great. We got some welcome. Glad to have you here. And let's see, aside from those people, if this is your first Discovering Buddhism module. Okay. So yeah, okay. So most people are familiar with it. And let's see. This is your first time taking a course with me? Anybody? Okay. Okay. So it looks like most people, this is their first time, so I can use some of my jokes that I break out every time. I think this is the first time I've taught this course. I was looking through my stuff, and I didn't have any notes on it. It's been so long that I've forgotten it. But this is going to be a fun course. This is not death, dying, hell realms, or anything like that. This is about dealing with our ordinary life, and it's stuff we can use right now, every day. So it's very practical, and I think people will find it particularly useful. For those who don't know me, I'm Robbie Watkins. I've been studying Tibetan Buddhism since the early 80s, and I've been a member of Kadampa Center since the early 90s. And I've been teaching various modules in Discovering Buddhism for a number of years since we've been putting this on. And I really enjoy being here. The classes will be pretty close to an hour each evening. I think if we go longer than that, there's kind of a diminishing return, I found. So we'll do an hour and try and be really pithy and to the point. And I will leave time, maybe not tonight, but in the future classes, to have a lot of questions and feedback. So if you have questions, save them up for the next class. And with that, I think we'll show the video. Okay, this is a video produced by the FPMT, our parent organization. There's an introduction to each Discovering Buddhism module. So we'll go ahead and watch that. Let's just say you've been fired from your job for 5 years, or your husband or wife leaves you. There's been a tragedy in your country, any worst case scenario you can imagine. If someone came along and told you that in reality, this horrible situation is the best opportunity for spiritual practice, you might think they're crazy. But this is what the Buddha taught: how to transform problems into the path of enlightenment. It makes sense. The world is still full of war and poverty, and our minds are full of delusions like anger, jealousy, and attachment. Problems are constant. But we can learn to use these otherwise unfortunate circumstances as an opportunity to accelerate our spiritual growth. Using techniques based on loving kindness and compassion for others and ourselves, we can learn to face difficult situations with skill, wisdom and humor, and literally transform problems into happiness.
Transforming suffering into the path to enlightenment is at the very heart of the Buddha's Mahayana teachings. But these thought transformation techniques are, in fact, very difficult to practice. When they were first taught, they were kept secret for that very reason, because of their difficulty. Thought transformation techniques are based in bodhicitta. And therefore, it's essential when one receives these teachings to receive them with a mind imbued by bodhicitta, the attitude wishing to attain enlightenment as quickly as possible, in order to understand thought transformation correctly. Therefore, for that reason, generate in your mind now a strong intention to achieve enlightenment as quickly as possible in order to bring to enlightenment all other suffering mother sentient beings quickly.
Assume everybody here has problems. Yeah. Often when we have problems, we feel like we're the only people who have problems. But wouldn't you say everybody has problems? But our problems are worse than other people's, right? Isn't it? Definitely, 100% worse. Yeah. So we should be the object of other people's sympathy and their compassion and their aid. And the way to transform our problems is to get them to stop doing all the nasty things they're doing towards us. Right? That's not actually transforming our problem. That's throwing the problem at the other person. Okay? Telling them that they're the source of our problem and believing it ourselves, that other people is the source of our problems. Okay? When we have that view on life, you know, that I'm just this little, innocent, sweet, charming, wonderful, joyful person who doesn't mean harm to anybody, and yet all these mean, nasty, cruel, vicious, ununderstanding people cause me problems. We have to totally get out of this idea of blaming. Yeah, because we're very much, I think, a country and a culture that likes to point the finger and blame. And, you know, you caused it, you did it, you're going to suffer. Okay, if there's a problem, you know, finding somebody to blame means finding somebody that we can cause to suffer, thinking that when somebody else suffers, we're going to feel better afterwards. Okay, I think that whole way of looking at life doesn't work. Okay, because it's not about finding one cause, because everything's interdependent and everybody contributes something. Okay, and it's not about finding the cause so that we can punish somebody. Now, how do we work with problems? How do we transform problems? Okay. I think it depends on how we look at a situation. Okay. First of all, how we define a problem. Because there could be some event going on with somebody else, and you can call it a problem, or you can call it an opportunity. And this is kind of the difference between whether we're looking at things in a worldly way or whether we're looking at them in a spiritual way. Okay? Because in a worldly way, we label a situation a problem when our needs and wants aren't getting met. Isn't that kind of the definition of a problem for you? When your needs and wants aren't getting met, when your expectations aren't getting met, when your plans aren't happening. Okay? So we have an idea of the situation, and what we're looking for is pleasure and happiness and getting our way and being right. Okay, that's kind of what our goal is. Yeah, our goal in a situation is my happiness. When the goal of my happiness, and preferably my happiness now rather than later, okay, when that goal is frustrated, we call that a problem. Okay? So, yeah, and that's our usual worldly way of looking at things, isn't it? Okay. Now, if we're spiritual practitioners, the goal of any situation is not my pleasure. Think about that one for a while. Can you imagine living your life where the goal is not your own pleasure and not your own happiness? Does that seem like something that's possible? Hello out there. If we're trying to practice the spiritual path, our goal in a situation is not my happiness. Our goal is to learn. Okay? Our goal is to learn about ourselves. Our goal is to learn about others. Our goal is to, through this learning, be able to purify our own mind and develop our own good qualities. Our goal is, through this learning, to be able to contribute to the welfare of the world, to, you know, help sentient other living beings along the path to enlightenment, to help them even in some, you know, ordinary way now. So when we change that paradigm, when our goal in a situation is different, Okay? Then it becomes much more difficult to have problems. So in everything that we experience, everything that we do, there's always something to learn. If we approach life with that my purpose in this situation is to learn something that in the end of the day will be useful for myself and for others, then we're never going to have a problem, because in every situation we can learn. When our focus becomes on our own training and our own practice, it then our focus stops being to make other people change and make other people different so that they stop causing our problems, because we realize at some level that we can't. Okay? The transformation of the problems starts here with this one. Okay? And it starts with looking at our reactions to the situations that we're in, and really being able to look honestly at our reactions, not paint them over, not be sweet, okay, but really kind of be able to sit there and, okay, somebody's acting this way, why am I reacting in this? What do I think I need from this person that they aren't giving me? And how, you know, where does contentment really come from? When you're content, do you get angry? No. When you're content, do you get jealous? When you're content, do you hold on to a grudge? When you're content, are you full of greed and craving? When you're content, do you hide your mistakes and pretend you don't have them? When you're content, you pretend to be somebody you're not and impress people falsely. No. It's like when there's a feeling of contentment in our own mind, then kind of naturally we act with kindness. And a lot of, you know, all those negative emotions and then the behaviors that they cause, they just get pacified automatically, because there's no dissatisfied, discontent feeling inside that motivates all of those other attitudes and behaviors. The kind of contentment that we're trying to develop is not the contentment of, I got my way, I got my needs met, the world's love me. It's not that. It's the contentment of us feeling okay about ourselves. It's come simply through our own spiritual practice by using our own mind. When Buddhism talks about contentment, we should not equate contentment with apathy. They're two different things. With apathy, we don't care. Okay. And you can be apathetic and discontent, can't you? Yeah. And I think very often the nihilistic position that people go into in our society, you know, of, well, it's all worthless, it, you know, or it's just, you just sign it off. This is, you know, under, it's discontent compounded with apathy. Okay. Whereas contentment is a totally different ballgame. Okay. Contentment is a feeling of well-being in ourselves. So we can have this contentment, some kind of self-confidence. And that will lead us to have compassion for others rather than criticize them and pick them to bits. You know, have compassion for them. And then based on that compassion, act against injustice or prejudice or intercede when there's a harmful situation. Okay? So that compassion can be just as strong of a motivator and a much wiser one than anger. And contentment, you know, we can be content and we can still want to improve things in the future. Okay? there's a sense of well-being in ourself that doesn't depend on how the world treats us. Okay, there's a sense of well-being in the self that comes through our own spiritual practice. So there's an inner sense of contentment that isn't dependent upon, you know, getting what we want, having people like us and love us and appreciate us and tell us we're right and intelligent and blah, blah, blah. Okay? So, but on the basis of that inner sense of contentment, it doesn't mean that we eschew the rest of the world and block it out and fall into apathy, okay? Because again, motivated by compassion, we can still act to remedy injustice, remedy discrimination, but the way we do it is not going to be in an angry way. We can see, okay, I have a problem and somebody's treating me unfairly or there's discrimination against me or whatever. Have that sense of inner contentment. Yeah. But then actively work to change the situation, not because we hate the people, the other people in it, but because we care about them. Okay. So the person, you care about the person who's oppressing you. You care about the person whose political ideas you think are totally corrupt. Okay? You care about the person who's destroying the environment. You care about the person who's beating up your loved one. Okay? This is very opposite from our usual way of thinking, isn't it? Okay? But, you know, our usual way of thinking hasn't gotten us anywhere, so we might as well try another way. Okay? Because the thing is, if there's this conflict situation, we see the other person as an enemy, and we don't care about their well-being, okay, then we're likely to inflict more harm out of anger. Okay? So first of all, we're creating negative karma because we have a negative motivation of anger that has the intention to harm. Second of all, we destroy the other person's happiness. You know, because they're more miserable, then they're going to do more that harms us back. So we're just escalating the conflict. So we fight oppression or, you know, injustice or ecological devastation or whatever out of care for the quote-quote enemy, because we don't see them as an enemy that's out there that's inherently evil. We see them as another living being just like us who wants to be happy. So this takes, you know, I'm just kind of explaining this using words, yeah, but to actually understand it, we need to sit, okay? This isn't something that we're going to get through just intellectual understanding. We have to really sit, you know, in our meditation practice and think about this. And then we need to examine our own mind. Be able to identify in our own mind when we're content and when we're discontent. Be able to identify in our mind when we're really accepting things and when we've gone into nihilism or apathy. We need to look in our own mind and identify, what does anger feel like? What does genuine compassion feel like? What is a positive aspiration? What does that feel like? So really understanding these things all depends on our own meditation practice. It's not dependent on intellectual understanding. Okay?
Difficult situation, sense that it doesn't, you know, upset you or make you angry or like that is, it's not so much that one part of it is having an antidote at the time, you know, or using a technique at the time, right? But I think far more important than that is that one has, you know, a fairly steady, continual, solid practice. You know, meditating on Lam Rim every day, and not just one part of it, but, you know, gradually going through the whole Lam Rim. Not choosing, like, one part that you like and not doing one part that you don't like, but consistently and continually meditating on the Lam Rim, right? So that really is the basis, because if your mind is becoming more calm, more steady on a daily basis by meditating on the Lam Rim, then when situations arise, there's less chance of being overwhelmed by a negative emotion such as anger or attachment or desire. You're much better or well prepared for the situation, yeah? And so therefore, in one sense, it's almost more natural because you see the situation, there's a better chance or more chance of seeing the situation for what it is as opposed to what you're projecting or karmically projecting onto the situation. You know, somebody who's familiarizing themselves with impermanence day after day after day, you know, doing it, you know, properly, effectively, then somebody dies or, you know, there's separation or, you know, in terms of time, if the time changes or a situation changes, you know, it's much more easy to accept. It's much more easy to accept is because your mind is already prepared and more closer to reality, right? You're making your mind more familiar with this reality that others exist, they have suffering, they don't want suffering, same as yourself, right? It's very sort of straightforward thing, it's reality, you know. Others exist, they're important, they have problems, they suffer, just like oneself, right? So if you're day after day familiarizing yourself with that, and then you come up with a situation, you know, a problem between yourself and some other person or some other people, then your attitude is already, there's less thinking of oneself and more thinking of the other person. So almost already you don't have a problem, because, you know, you'll find in most situations problems arise, or problem exists, or it appears to exist, is mainly because of ego, self-cherishing mind, attachment to one's own happiness. So that's really the basis of creating the problem. And it doesn't mean that outside there isn't a difficult situation, but inside there's not a problem in the sense of like it appearing like a problem, so that you're becoming emotional, you're becoming angry, you're becoming jealous, you're becoming some way upset, your mind is disturbed, right? So therefore, of course, that difficult situation is made very complicated because of the mind being disturbed inside. Whereas, you know, if there is a difficult situation, you know, you have every chance of resolving it if you really are concerned about that other person or what that other person is going through or experiencing. If you really want to help that other person, there's not a problem. The situation still can be difficult, but there's not really a problem. I mean, the mind, your mind, is not disturbed or unhappy.
Okay, thank you. The real meat of this course will be when you take the material that we talk about here on Monday nights and go home and meditate on it during the week. So I wanted to start with a brief meditation tonight. We haven't gone over any of the material, so we'll just do a breathing meditation. And some people may be new to meditation, particularly in the style we do it in the Tibetan tradition. So I'll talk you through it. If you want to wiggle around for a minute. First thing to do is establish your posture. And first thing is your back is nice and straight. You're not leaning backwards. You're not slouched over. A little straighter than you normally sit. Not rigid, though. Your head is maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical, but not tilted to one side or the other. Eyes can either be lightly closed or just slightly open to let a little light in. Your lips are closed, but your jaw is relaxed, not clenched. Your tongue is on the backside of the gum, rigid gum, above your upper teeth, touching there. Shoulders are down and a little bit back, so your chest is open. This opens the energy channels that our thoughts ride on that are in front of the spinal column. Our upper arms are away from the sides of our torso. Our right hand is on our left with our thumbs touching just slightly below the level of our navel. You can either sit with your feet flat on the floor and it's fine to put a cushion under your feet if that's better, or you can cross your legs in any variety of positions. But the point is to establish a posture that is stable and once established is non-distracting. You don't... The point of the posture is not to torture yourself, but to get it set so it's self-maintaining. So take a moment, scan your body, identify any sources of tension that are there now and address those. And to help settle your mind and become a little bit more focused, take 3 deep breaths from the abdomen with the stomach expanding on the in-breath and contracting towards your spine on the out-breath. Just do that 3 times. And we always like to begin our meditation session by establishing our motivation. And any motivation is fine if you're just meditating out of curiosity or want to learn something about your ability to meditate, that's fine. If you're meditating to help calm your mind, that's great. But said the most powerful motivation is what was referred to in the video as the bodhicitta motivation, in which everything we do, including just this simple meditation, is done for the purpose of becoming enlightened so that we can benefit all other beings. And that's not normally the way we think. It's not our normal motivation for what we do during the day, but we can think that way. It may be a little bit unnatural or effortful, but that's fine. So just establish the bodhicitta motivation. And having set our motivation, now we're just going to do a simple concentration meditation. Just place our mind on the breath, the physical sensation of breath moving in and out through our nostrils. A little bit of cool air coming in, going out. We just pay attention to that. We're not describing it to ourselves. We're not thinking about it. It's just direct experience. Mind, breath. Mind on the breath. And we just stay with that. And every time our mind wanders, as it inevitably will, we just gently bring it back. We're not hard with ourselves. We just come back to the breath over and over and over again. And that's the meditation we'll do for the next few minutes. And we can end our meditation with what we call a dedication. We acknowledge that we've done something a little bit out of the ordinary. And even this brief meditation has made a positive imprint on our mind stream. And we think, may that positive energy not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that benefits all sentient beings. Okay. If I write on the whiteboard, will the Zoom people be able to see me? Okay. I just wanted to give a very brief introduction to this material that we'll be talking about over the next few weeks, kind of put it in where it fits in all of the Buddha's teachings. So we have the historical figure of the Buddha, who lived 2,000 years ago in northern India. And he did what a Buddha does, which is to teach. So he gave hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of oral teachings. And there's all sorts of different ways to organize them or think about, get, wrap your mind around them. And one way, whoops, is to divide them up into teachings on wisdom, which refers to seeing reality as it is, and then teachings on compassion, which is developing the wish that others be free from suffering. And those are the two essential qualities of enlightenment, the state of a Buddhahood. You're saying you need to develop wisdom, you need to develop compassion. Or as a teacher came here and said, you got to be smart and you got to be nice. Just one doesn't cut it. You got to be smart and nice to become a Buddha. So what we're going to be talking about in this course comes from the compassion teachings of the Buddha. And it's a specific group of teachings that are referred to as Lojong, sometimes written as one word, sometimes written as two words, sometimes hyphenated. Lo is typically translated as mind. I saw another translation that said attitude. Okay, mind or attitude. Jong, translated as transforming. Another way it's translated is as cleansing. Okay, so these are the thought transformation teachings of the Buddha, which he gave a whole lot. It's a big category. How to deal with problems. Okay, and this is a necessary step in developing compassion. Now, sometimes you'll hear, just to clear things up, sometimes you'll hear a reference to Lo Rig, which are teachings on the nature of the mind. That's a different Discovering Buddhism module on mind and mental factors, okay? So it's easy to get them confused, but we're talking about Lojong, not Lo Rig, and we're not talking about Lo Mein, which is a Chinese noodle dish. Okay? We're not talking about that either. We're talking about Lojong. And these teachings were passed down orally over hundreds of years in India primarily, but also in Indonesia and other places, from one person to the next, what we refer to as the lineage. They came down to someone named Shantideva, great Indian master. A lot of you may be familiar with his book, Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, which is a beautiful, very poetic Buddhist text. And through Shantideva, they came through Atisha, who was in the 800s, great Indian master, who was the one who took Buddhism back to Tibet after it died out there. And through Atisha came to two of his students. One is and this is just history, y'all don't have to remember any of this, but some people find it interesting. Geshe Chikawa, who wrote a text called the 7-Point Mind Training, and the other one is Longri Tampo, T-A-N-G-P-A. He lived about 1000, I think, 1000 A.D. And his text was 8 verses of thought transformation. So there are, what they're doing is they're taking the teachings that they received and organizing them in a way for others to benefit from. But it is the actual teachings of the Buddha that have come down. And since these two wrote there are lots and lots of thought transformation texts, but there are people who write books about their texts and books about their texts and what we refer to as commentaries. For example, His Holiness the Dalai Lama has written several books on the 8 verses of thought transformation. But these are the two texts you hear talked about a lot because they're both short. This one's about 3 pages, and you can find it online. It's easy to find. But the one we're going to be using as the basis of this course is Longri Tampo's 8 Verses of Thought Transformation. And as you become familiar with Tibetan Buddhism, you find everything is numerated. There are going to be 8 of this and 7 of that and 5 of that. So the root text for this course is the 8 Verses of Thought Transformation, and it's in the readings that you'll find online. It's very short. It seems quite simple, but it's actually quite profound. And I am just going to read it through one time this evening so you can get a sense of where we'll be going in this class. So 8 verses. The first verse is, determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all sentient beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold them most dear at all times. First verse. Second, when in the company of others, I shall always consider myself the lowest of all, and from the depths of my heart hold others dear and supreme. 3. Vigilant the moment a delusion appears in my mind, endangering myself and others, I shall confront and avert it without delay. Whenever I see beings who are wicked in nature and overwhelmed by violent negative actions and suffering, I shall hold such rare ones dear, as if I had found a precious treasure. When, out of envy, others mistreat me with abuse, insults, or the like, I shall accept defeat and offer the victory to others. When someone whom I have benefited and whom I have great hopes gives me terrible harm, I shall regard that person as my holy guru. In short, both directly and indirectly, do I offer every happiness and benefit to all my mothers. I shall secretly take upon myself all their harmful actions and suffering. Undefiled by the stains of the superstitions of the 8 worldly concerns, may I, by perceiving all phenomena as illusory, be released from the bondage of attachment. So that's the entire text. We'll be going through that verse by verse over the next 5 weeks. And then during the week at home, you'll meditate on that and see if you can come to some understanding of what it means for you. One of our visiting teachers said that Buddhism is really just about developing new habits. Okay, what we're talking about here is abandoning those mental habits that don't work, that cause us problems. We'll talk more about this next week, but are typically thoughts motivated by anger, attachment, and ignorance, and replacing them with thoughts motivated by love, compassion, patience, generosity. And we'll talk next week about why we want to do that. But the whole point of the Buddhist philosophy of the mind is that that is possible. Okay, we've got some very strong habits of thinking in certain ways, but none of that is fixed and permanent in our mind. Any of it can be changed. And this is what happens in meditation. We abandon the old ways of thinking and we replace them with ways of thinking that are the cause of happiness and ultimately enlightenment. So lots of times we think we're kind of stuck with this mind we have that we can't really do. And this is just, you know, this is not a superficial practice that we're trying to fool ourselves into thinking we're happy when we're not, or we don't have problems when we do. It's about really changing the thoughts that arise in our mind. So the thoughts that cause suffering no longer arise. And the thoughts that cause happiness arise spontaneously and without effort. And the Buddha said that's possible for each of us because our mind is incredibly flexible. It's not fixed or stuck in any sort of way. So the homework this week is quite simple. If you don't have a meditation practice, I'd like you to begin one, and it's identify your meditation site and the time of day that you're going to do it. And I would like you to read to yourself the 8 verses of thought transformation at the beginning of your meditation, and then just sit in concentration meditation for 10 minutes after that, and do that 6 days out of the coming week. And then we'll get back here next week and we'll start going through the text line by line and really working with what it means. Any questions before we break for the evening?
If you have a question on Zoom, feel free to raise your hand or just unmute and ask. If you have a question on YouTube, feel free to put it in the chat box. If you're here live in the Gampa, just raise your hand.
Okay, so that's it for tonight. Just a lot of introductory material, but I think we'll be ready to go next week and really work with this text. And it's a perfect size for we'll have 5 weeks to work with, and it's, you know, it's not too wordy, so we'll really be able to get through the whole thing and begin to apply it to our own lives. So thanks, everyone. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.